Thank you very much for this opportunity. Before I get into the quest center, I'd like to just make two personal notes because this is rather special occasion for me. I'm a cerebrovascular researcher, and so for maybe 20 years or so, I was investigating something that was discovered by Charles Scott Sherrington. And in 1890, he had a, I guess, very reproducible experiment in which he demonstrated that, an animal experiment in which he demonstrated that functional activity leads to changes actually in volume, but he related it to blood flow, that functional activity leads to corresponding blood flow changes in the brain, and I guess most of you know that the rest is history, that this is the obviously one of the underpinnings of functional neuroimaging. The other personal note is more to tell you about my motivation, how I got into this, and that's actually a sad story, I have to say. And that is because I'm a stroke researcher, and I'm in the field, you know, for 30 years or so. And I've been part of a research field that, I have to say, didn't achieve much. And actually what's happening worldwide is that over the last decades we have killed millions of animals in our experiments. We have found wonderful treatments that are working nicely in our models. We have published in beautiful journals. We have become professors, some of us at least. I have become one. With this type of research, billions were spent, no question about that. But there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of neutral or negative, meaning even worse for the people who received the study drug, clinical trials. So it is no exaggeration, although most people in my field would not say this, that we have been a total failure. At least with respect to what our basic motivation should be. Somehow I actually feel at least part of the responsibility for this. We have not done the right thing. This is not something we can just take lightly and continue. And so this brought me into thinking about where the problems come from, and I'll mention a few in a second, and many of them have already been mentioned. So far we have heard, and I think this is probably the most important part, about things that you can do, things that how you can improve your work better, to design your studies better, to analyze your studies better, to publish them better, and so forth. If this is not reflected on the other side by the system, run by the institutions, the universities, and so forth, this is obviously a problem, and it was, I think, discussed, and a lot of the it showed up today several times that somehow a lot of the things that we heard of are not at this point really fostering careers. In fact, they may even be harmful to some point with respect to careers, and this is why I think institutions have to step in, and quite a while ago Alistair, who was here, and a friend from the industry, one of those people that we heard in the morning who blew the whistle that industry doesn't believe in what academics do in their labs, that institutions have to do a better job. And so this brings me, this is background still, and we don't have to go into it. There is a huge discussion about these issues, reproducibility, ethical issues, and so forth. And this is not only, we should be reminded, I think, of the fact that this is not just happening in our community. This is something that is now also discussed by a wider public. Almost every week you read something about this, and in fact, now some of the studies that we produce are featured on Breitbart and are used as a kind of a sign that now scientists understand that they are just doing bullshit and that they are manipulating us, and then we are very soon we are with anti-vaxxers and climate change denialists and so forth. So this is a big issue, and we should be aware of that this has implications beyond our own work. Now, there are these problems, and we have been talking about them the whole morning, and I don't have to read through them again, but just from a systematical standpoint, they have to do with methodology. That's something that was extensively discussed. There is obviously an ethical part to this. If we expose patients to studies that are not really founded well with respect to, I mean, the underpinnings in the laboratory are not solid. And there is a governance issue here, which is about incentives and so forth. So that's kind of the challenges. And so what are we going to do about it? In Berlin, there is an institution that is thinking about these things and that gave us some money to come up with a few fresh ideas. And this institution is the Berlin Institute of Health. You don't need to know much about it, but what's relevant is that this is a kind of an overarching structure that covers a large medical school and university hospital, one of the largest in Europe, the Charité Hospital, and its research, and a basic research institution in Berlin. Roughly 5,000 researchers and clinicians, and so this is kind of an interesting ecosystem to work on. To check practice and to try things out to improve the value of the research that is done there. And so we have a sort of pompous mission, and that's to increase biomedical research value at the VIH and maybe even beyond. That's pretty high stakes. So what are we doing? And I could give you now sort of a dry list of things, but what I would like to do is I will just pick a few of the examples that we are just now working on. And they have to do with open science, quality assurance, education, meta-research, incentives, research with the public, and so forth. And that's just a list, and I think it makes more sense to discuss with you a few things that are just happening right now. And so I'll give you a few examples. I should also tell you that we are doing this since only half a year or so. So most of the things that I'll show you are ongoing. Now, one thing is, and there's a team that does all those things. One thing obviously has to do with this large theme of open science. And maybe this is surprising to you in Oxford that we need something like this, and maybe you already have it, so some of the things are maybe already a standard here. I'm not sure about that, but in general, in this ecosystem that I work with, open science is actually something that most researchers don't know about. They don't know how to do it. They're not even opposed to it. They just don't know that it exists and that this is something they should do. So we have one person, Lisa Liebenau, and she is our open science policy officer, and she helps scientists, sort of takes them by their hand and shows them how to do things. And obviously she produces things on the web, which journals are recommended, how to enrich data, how to put metadata on it. We are now in a campaign where every researcher at the Charité and at the NDC needs to get his own ORCID registration and so forth. So this is complemented by trying to get money for open access fees. That's one of the big hurdles right now, that many scientists say, well, I have to pay for it, I can't do that. I think in this country you're supported by the MRC and so forth, but in Germany for many of the scientists they just don't have the funds to do it. So we just applied for them for a large grant to it's about 500,000 euros or so for this whole community to pay for open access. And we To kick this off, we, with own money of the center, we are paying for open access. We have a publication fund, and so people are just sending in their invoices, and we are paying for it. But that, what's more interesting, I think, is to get towards true open science, and that is, we have heard about it, pre-registration, that is a publication of null results, open data, deposition of data, and so we are, I think the best thing always is to incentivize with either money or prestige or whatever, and so we have put up our own challenges. The Open Science Foundation has similar things going, but the bar is very high at the Open Science Foundation. I guess none of our researchers would qualify to claim a prize there. We have lower bars, and so we pay prices. So if people have pre-registered, if they have published null results and so forth. This is partially, obviously, to incentivize individual researchers, but it's also to raise interest, to make the cause for it, because now they are reading, well, there's 1,000, what's that, pre-registration, and I get 1,000 for it, so it's kind of, we're pitching it with it. And this is, now I'm really giving you a kind of a hodgepodge of things, but this is really something that we need to do on a very broad scale. So one other thing we're doing is we are rolling out an electronic laboratory notebook into this environment. Right now we have 1,000 licenses, which are not obviously not enough. If we're successful, we need maybe 5 or 6,000. It's a start, and we have a collaboration with a company that produces it, and we were able to help them with some features and so forth. So right now there's a campaign where we are actively looking for laboratories who want to start working with a laboratory notebook. One other example, and one person you saw twice now, that's Ingo, he's very active working with us. That's a laboratory critical incidents reporting. You might think, oh my God, what's that? There's so much to be learned from errors, and you can't imagine how many errors you can make in a laboratory. And they usually the knowledge, even in a closed environment, the knowledge of errors and how to prevent them usually gets lost with people that leave the lab and so forth. So and in aviation, for example, or in power plants. Or even in clinics, this is mandatory to have error management systems. So we developed one, it's on GitHub, and you can download it. It's a very simple system, and it helps researchers to learn from their errors. We are trying to also help scientists with designs of their studies and even maybe come up with some new designs. I know that one of the referees of this paper is in the audience, there we are proposing sequential designs in this experimental realm, which to most of you, sequential designs, either frequency or Bayesian, are probably sort of boilerplate, but we did a text mining of the entire midline to find out whether there are any sequential designs which we there show are, can be effective in terms of reducing animals at the same power or increasing power with the same amount of animals, whether they exist, and it's never been done. We didn't find a single one. So this is just one example where we are trying to improve on methods. Here's another example, which, and as you can see, a lot of this has to do with a preclinical environment, laboratory environment. It turns out that quality in terms of SOP, standard operating procedures, and documentation and so forth in laboratories in academia is rather low. With a European consortium that will just start in a few weeks, we will try to come up with an error with a quality management system for academia and roll it out in our sort of laboratories at the BIH. that is, well, not aversive to scientists, that is modular, that is not stifling creativity and so forth. And we also have money from the Volkswagen Stiftung in Germany that feeds into this, where we are trying to come up with ideas to do quality assessment. And this also includes some rather controversial things, maybe, like auditing. I mean, we just do things and claim that we have done them, but the question is, have we really done them, and have we done them properly? So in clinical medicine, for example, studies are audited and monitored, but in preclinical, this is not happening. So we're discussing things like that. We're trying to implement them. Now, we're also working on the clinical side. Obviously, there are problems as well. A huge issue with clinical trials, and you all know this, is that they are not getting published. At least there's a huge publication bias with respect to null or negative results. Probably roughly 50%, maybe a bit more, of studies that are concluded. And this is, we know that they are concluded because in the registries they are ticked as having finished recruitment, never see the light of publication. And that is a scandal, and something needs to be done about it. Now, to do this in this local environment, we have teamed up with partners from other universities in Germany and with Cochrane. And we're just analyzing the data now. What we did is we did an analysis of all the clinical trials that were sponsored by, for example, the Charité, where the center is, but also of all the other academic medical schools in Germany. And we have checked whether they had been published or not. And we are going to produce, first of all, we are going to publish the numbers, and we are doing kind of a list, sort of the best and the worst, blame and shame game. We'll see how this works out, and approach funders and ask funders, are you serious? Do you want to give money to an institution that only publishes 60% or 40% or whatnot of those results? This may be the last study we do before. we'll see. A lot of the things I think we have to change or think about have to do with the incentive system. I think this is actually at the core of almost everything. And that's just a slide that reminds me of this. This is a slide that I use when I teach good scientific practice, because a lot of the things that I have to teach are actually, I feel a bit uneasy about, because if young scientists follow these things that I tell them, it might not even be good for their careers. But we have a few projects to maybe change this. This is not one to change it, but to get a status quo and see whether we are actually having any impact. And that's a study, that's a survey on organizational research climate and research practice. We have a lot of partners, and Oxford being one of them. Where similar surveys are being done. We have a battery of questions that are being asked to scientists in these institutions, and these questions have to do with the climate and the practice of science, how conducive it is to open science, to all the things that have been discussed here. And the idea, obviously, is to just see how are we doing, how are we comparing with others, and if we now do all kinds of things, do things get better or maybe they get worse? A lot of the things that I've shown you and a lot of the things that we are discussing here are very plausible in terms of improving research practice and the value of research, but they are not necessarily effective. We don't know. Some of those things may actually be stifling our work and creativity and whatnot. So I think we really, it also helps us to promote these things if we can show that it has the effects that we claim. And that's just part of it at this point, to get a baseline. So these are questions, just to remind me to tell you what we are asking. Here's one Here are questions regarding publication practices. How common are researchers in your immediate research environment to apply open access in their publication practice? It's just one question, not at all to no basis for judging. How committed are senior administrators at your university institution to apply open data principles when publishing research results? So you get the idea. This is what we are trying to find out on an institutional level, but also on an individual level. Now, getting closer to a discussion that we had in the morning, that's about careers. I mean, how do these things feature in careers? Fortunately, we have a dean at the Charité who is very progressive, or he shares a lot of the ideas that were floating around here. And obviously, if you have a dean like this, and you have a dean here at the medical school who has similar ideas, this is very helpful. So together with Miriam Kipp, who is a person that I just hired, and the title I gave her is a good evaluation practice officer, we are changing the evaluation practice of the Charité, and this is just one example. If you apply for a professorship of the Charité, you have to go through a website. It's the professorship application service, so you will not be able to just send an envelope. You have to go through this thing. Before, and I'm talking 6 months ago or so, you were asked about the cumulative impact factor and how much third-party funding, and then you had to give a list of your publications. Now, it's a bit more complex, and you can't read it, but it just reminds me to tell you what's on there. Now, the first thing they see is a page where they have to put in narratives, and these narratives are about their contribution to science. In so many words, they have just 1,000 characters. So this is not about writing long stories, but you have to tell why. What are you proud of? What is your what are your contributions to science? It's about you have to tell which are your favorite, your best publications. But we blank out the journal from where it is. It's just a PMID that you see the identifier. And you have, for every publication of those five, you have to write why you think it's among your top five and what your contribution specifically was to this. Then we have a set of questions that says the Charité attaches great importance to transparent, replicable research and so forth, and supports open science. What have you done in this respect? And questions like this, and you can imagine that this is a very interesting exercise at this point, because most applicants are confused if they look at this. They say, well, what do you mean open science, and why do I have to answer these questions? And so a part of this is just also a status quo to learn about what applicants think about this. It's also a message to applicants. And now we collect the first sheets, and then we get these question marks, or it says non-applicable, and all kinds of things. But sometimes we read things that we would not have normally found out, that they are in committees in their universities where they work on these things. So that's very interesting. The problematic part of this then is to get this on the street, meaning if these sheets get into the commission has to make sense out of it, and my colleagues don't know what this means. So, and this is where Miriam Kipp, this lady, comes back in again, because she has to sit there like an equal opportunity officer and say, well, you have discussed this Cell paper, but there's this other guy, and he has five studies that have been replicated. Did you discuss this? So it's an experiment, and right now we are basically learning how this works. Maybe we are getting kicked out by our own colleagues. Just in mentioning in passing, we also have activities that have to do with public outreach. I think we're very often, at least in this type of science that I'm involved with, we are very in crowd, and actually we're getting funded by the public, and but we normally we don't interact much. And so one project that we have is with the University of Zurich, where we are establishing on a cooperative level system where we give our patients, where we want to give our patients up the data that is created in studies that we are doing with them. They can enrich it with their own data from their physicians at home, or whether they feel good or feel bad or whatnot. And if they like, and this is our incentive then to do this, they can give it back to us enriched. But they can also play with it and use it on their own, use it just as a vault for their own data. So this is just one way of trying to get into a dialogue with the public. And finally, that's kind of also to me a reminder that we are also very much interested in the ethical side of this whole discussion. Especially in neuroscience, there is, I guess, the problem that a lot of the patients that we enroll in studies have very severe diagnoses. Think ALS, think stroke, and so forth. It's very easy to actually make them take part in any study because of the dismal or lack of other options they have, and that's a very vulnerable population. And it's not easy to deal with this, and especially it's a problem if we are then enrolling them into studies like this with non-solid evidence. And so we have we're organizing a conference next year, that is dealing or trying to discuss these problems. And so this was just a kind of a hodgepodge of things. There's more to it, but it gives you an impression of an activity that tries to come from the top and meet up kind of somewhere in the middle with activities that start from the bottom. We have lots of students at the Charité who talk about these things and are very active, and then there are the journals we heard about, pre-registered reports and those things. So all this has to somehow come together. But this is one attempt to change, or at least to nudge the system from the top, and to provide services. I should finish with just an invitation. We're doing a lot of meta research, and we have several attractive positions for people who are interested in meta research, from just coming to us for a short project or a sabbatical or whatever to a longer stay and having a research group. Thank you very much.